Today I want to talk about removal of life support. In a medical context, removal of life support means that the hospital staff, under the direction of a medical doctor, is going to discontinue activities or to disconnect equipment that is sustaining and supporting the life of a patient. The purpose of the removal of life support is to allow the body to naturally stop functioning. In other words, to allow the body to die. By the time somebody is in the hospital and on life support, they're in pretty bad shape. Oftentimes, it is perceived that there is no hope of recovery. Hence, the willingness on the part of the family and the medical staff to remove that life support. If they think there's no chance of recovery, no chance of progress, then rather than to continue to allow that person's body to exist in its current state, which obviously would be degraded, and to over time naturally, despite the efforts to sustain it, die. I believe that everybody has a right to determine how and when their bodies die. I also believe that all physical death, and I think that's the only kind of death there is, death of a physical body is the only death that there really is. All death is suicide. That's not said as if suicide is a bad thing. It only means, in my opinion, that we recognize that we are involved. You know, there's a Latin basis to that word, suicide. Side is the death, and then suicide is who's involved in it. And it really is ourselves. If we recognize that our creative part in the processes that result in our physical death is what goes on, then we're in a position to go, oh, well, if I'm creative in that regard, maybe I can be creative constructively instead of creative destructively. Some people, I believe, think life happens to them and death happens to them. I don't believe that to be true. I believe we create life the way we experience it, and we create death the way we experience. It doesn't happen to us. We choose it and we cause it. And that's okay. So let's move back to a time before a person ends up in a hospital on life support. I think a person ends up in the doctor's office or the emergency room or the hospital because, in quotes, life support, in quotes, has already started to be removed from them. As our life support has decreased, both that which we've provided to ourselves and maybe other people have reduced their provision of, we start to decline to the point where there is a diagnosable condition that results in us going to the doctor, the ER, or the hospital. If I were to say that, you know, certain activities support life, you wouldn't be surprised by that. There's no great revelation there. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think even more importantly is this question. What would you define as life-supporting activities? And then, on the basis of that, if we've removed those life-supporting activities, then we could understand why a person will decline over time, and resulting in their physical death. At first thought, if you were to answer, what would you define as life-supporting activities? Well, let me think. It would be pretty easy, because the first things that would pop into our minds probably would relate to breathing. I think breathing is a life-supporting activity. Eating, drinking, resting, they'd come to mind really quickly for us. But think of it. Shallow breathing is not as life-supporting as deep breathing, except in cases if there's a real-life threat, then you want to breathe shallowly and rapidly as we run or fight for survival. So that shallow breathing in those contexts would be more life-supporting than taking a nice deep breath. And by that time, maybe we would end up as a menu item for some modern-day version of a saber-toothed tiger. Eating processed food filled with chemical additives is not as life-supporting as eating natural, fresh foods. Drinking beverages, right? There's a thing that varies tremendously in terms of being life-supporting or not. I know people that drink diet sodas for breakfast, thinking, yep, that's a balanced way to start today, a diet soda. It's like, whoa, that's a lot of chemicals going into the system right off the bat. We would say, wait a minute, I think good fresh water, I think is probably a very rare commodity today because everything seems to be going from into bottles, or if it's a municipal water system, you know, it's been chlorinated, fluoridated, who knows what else has been done to it before it comes out of our taps into the glass. But if we could get clear, fresh, good water, I would say that's better and more life-supporting than, say, diet sodas or high-sugar drinks like regular Coca-Cola. Staying awake while you drive your car, that's a good idea. Putting yourself in a situation where you have to drink stuff like Red Bull and these other concoctions might not be that life-supporting. On Thursday night calls that I usually host, I, from time to time, encourage people to habituate 7 simple life-supporting activities. They're simple and they're easy. And it's good because that means they're easy to implement. The trouble is, I doubt if they're implemented all that often. I encourage people to breathe deeply. Get enough oxygen into the body. Cells like oxygen. And guess what? Cancer does not. A cancerous cell does not survive in a high oxygenated environment. Drink plenty of good water. Dehydration is a big problem. A lot of people experience all kinds of symptoms of dehydration, from constipation to asthma to acid reflux and other things that are identified by some people in the medical profession as being simply symptoms of dehydration. It's like, wow. Sometimes people misinterpret their hunger impulse. Oh, I got to eat something. And it's not really hunger that just got triggered. It's some sort of signal that they're dehydrated. The cells are thirsty. And if you wait for your mouth to tell you you're thirsty, you've waited too long. So besides breathing deeply, getting plenty of good oxygen, drinking sufficient good water, eating decent food at regular intervals to maintain some sort of balanced blood sugar levels so that binging is not such a big problem for people, that seems pretty straightforward right there, right? Getting adequate rest. I think this is an area where a lot of people are disadvantaged, not able to get adequate rest, either because of their habit patterns, the way their lifestyle goes, or their environment, their work. Their lives are so stress-filled that getting enough rest is not really possible. Even though it's recognized that when people have adequate rest, they function physically, emotionally, mentally better. There have been studies that have deprived people of sleep just to see what their effects would be on the physical body. And then they recognized these people were emotionally, had like a hair trigger reactions, and they would get angry at the least little thing, and they couldn't process information effectively. So minor mental tasks, you know, addition of simple numbers, all of a sudden became really difficult and cumbersome. So they functioned, or better said, malfunctioned emotionally and mentally because they didn't get enough rest. And it seems as though that rest period when we're sleeping, getting a decent night's sleep, is where there's a lot of repair and maintenance on a physical level, but also some sort of organization of environmental signals, the thoughts, the energy that we've acquired consciously and subconsciously over the course of the day can get organized and make sense of, and stuff that doesn't serve us can be released. But if we don't get adequate rest, that maintenance and repair is not happening. The idea that we want to let go of what no longer serves us, that's a life-supporting activity. Being able to go to the bathroom, have a bowel movement, being able to urinate, that's life-enhancing. Being able to exhale carbon dioxide, that's life-supporting. So now we go, what should I do? Well, one of the areas is you should move your body. If we move our body, the expansion, contraction of our lungs, the movement of our arms and legs and muscles and bones all facilitate the lymphatic system being able to pump out waste, waste being metabolic waste from the cells, but also other things that we've acquired in the food that we eat or the beverages that we drink or the air that we breathe. We're able to move it out of our bodies more effectively. That lymphatic system doesn't have its own pump. So as we move, we're facilitating that whole cleansing process. Letting go of what no longer serves us is life-supporting. You go, For some of us, we pay attention to the alkaline acidic balance in the body, the pH level. There's a point of view that says that when the body is slightly alkaline, the 100 trillion microorganisms in the cells, in the bodies rather, will interpret that signaling as being an indication that they should be doing repair and maintenance. However, the point of view goes that when it drops into the acidic levels, that signal indicates to the 100 trillion cells, the microorganism, the microbes, it's like demolition. It's time to demolish the body, take it apart, reduce it to its most basic form. And for those of us who are still alive and want to stay alive, wait a minute. I didn't want to signal my body to start to take itself apart. I didn't want the maintenance crew to become the demolition crew. That's why paying attention to the pH can be valuable to us. Then ultimately, we've got to do something to reduce the stress, some modality, some technique or sets of techniques that will help us get back into balance, to let go of some of this energy that is overwhelming to us, gives us a sense that we're not able to handle the demands that we perceive, that we process as being our responsibility. We've got to look at that. Because if we take on demand after demand after demand after demand and are not able to respond specifically and effectively to them, we are interfering with our own life support. We're putting stacking bricks on top of us that our bodies and our minds and our emotions are not going to be able to handle. When you look at the seven things that I just talked about, you go, You realize I was mainly talking about supporting the life of the physical body. But we also know, based upon what I already said and your own awareness of this, that lack of sleep not only interferes with the physical body, but it interferes with the emotional body and the mental body. So it's like, this stuff is not all separate. There's an overlap here. So let's expand our thinking about life support. The earliest physical experience you and I have had with life support is through the umbilical cord that connected us to our mother's body. Our developing body, was connected to her mother's body. You go, oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. And our mother's body, more developed, was connected, in my belief system, to the consciousness that creates worlds and creates bodies. So the substances needed for our growth of our physical body were supplied through that pipeline, delivered to us through our mothers. Now, the vibrations that our mothers experienced, they were felt by us. They recognize now scientifically the baby is perceiving whatever the mother is perceiving. If she's thinking it, the baby is getting those vibrations. If she's feeling it, the baby is getting those vibrations. Now, are they only coming through the umbilical cord, or are they radiating through the amniotic fluid, or is it consciousness to consciousness influence being delivered? Yeah, I would think all three of those ways. And life support is more than the physical. Feelings of being loved support life. Feelings of not being loved represent the removal of life support. For years, there had been the story that is referred to, I guess, maybe in post-USSR, maybe post-World War II scenarios in Europe, where children in orphanages who were getting adequate food, they were being fed on a regular basis, but didn't receive human contact, weren't touched, weren't held, weren't cuddled, weren't sung to, didn't have that human interaction, and died. It doesn't only happen in orphanages in those circumstances. Years ago on television, there was a psychologist, Leo Biscaglia. Leo Biscaglia was a high vibration Dr. Phil. More loving, kinder, gentler, more respectful. Not a TV show person, but a real psychologist. He told a story about a person who had jumped to her death from a bridge. And when people were going, the police were going through her pockets to see if they could find some sort of personal identification so they could notify next of kin, came across a note. And the note said, "If somebody had smiled at me on the way to the bridge, I wasn't going to jump." So if we look at that from a life support context, what is life supporting? A smile? Your smile to another person? Is that life supporting? Because it validates somebody else's existence? They go from being a non-person, a non-entity, to a person because you were willing to smile and provide life support. You supported their life by indicating to them that you recognized them as a human being. I think that is amazingly powerful. When we recognize that we are the deliverers of life support, our thoughts, our feelings, our words, our actions are life support activities, or they're not. Or then not. We can make a decision not to do that. I don't know them. I don't know that person in the grocery store. I don't know that cashier. And we withhold life support. We remove it. It's natural to give it. It's natural to give it. But we can choose to remove it. We can choose to remove it when we think of ourselves. We can choose to remove it when we think of somebody else. I'll show them. And it's like, the trouble is, removing life support from somebody else is like sowing seeds. If we're sowing seeds, and that's my harvest of not getting life support. My own life support is being removed when I remove it from somebody else? I think so. I'm a believer in that law, the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. I can't believe anything could be fairer than that. If we cause it, we're going to feel the effect. Wow, that's fair. That's fair. And it's simple too, right? Simple. Now I know what I want to cause. I want to add life support to other people and things. I don't want to remove it. I want to add it. There's no shortage. There's no shortage of life support any more than there's a shortage of air or sunlight or thoughts or feelings. There's plenty. And if we have the impulse to hold it back, to not share it, that's a problem. We can heal that, because that belief that says we're separated from the source of all life and the source of all life support, it's a lie. We're in the ocean of life support. We're in the ocean of God. We're in the ocean of good. I've read about this diagnosis having to do with children. Failure to thrive. It's like, I wonder what that means. In terms of lack of life support. They didn't get it when they were in utero. They didn't get it during birth. They didn't get it in their earliest days of physical life outside the womb. They didn't get it in their earliest years. It was either removed, the life support, or they never received it in the first place, because the person to whom they were connected, or people to whom they were connected, didn't recognize their role as conduits of life support. That is mighty, mighty sad. I was recently looking out of the window from the 17th floor of a building, and I was amazed at the number of trees that I could see. Tree after tree after tree after tree. So I was looking at a lot of trees. So if I told you that a tree had died because either it couldn't or wouldn't absorb nutrition through its roots that would support its life, you would wonder why. Why couldn't it, or why wouldn't it? But if I told you that the tree had absorbed poison through its roots, you would understand why it would have died. Human relationships, and I think especially the primary relationship, I'll define that as mother, father, child. That's, you can't get any more fundamental than that, right? Father, mother, child. And I suppose, to a lesser extent, sibling-to-sibling relationships are what support life the best, or certainly have the potential to support life the best, if those relationships are so important, so fundamental, so primary to our existence, and vibrations don't flow between those individuals that support life, then I would say they most effectively remove life support. For a person not to make peace with his or her parental roots, that is, not to make peace with our father and our mother, really is to remove life support from ourselves and even the parent. I think the parent, no matter how effective or ineffective they were at delivering love and caring and nurturing and protection and fulfillment of our needs, their goal was to do that. Whether they were effective, to some extent they were. To another extent, they weren't. But that's true of all of us. For us not to make peace with our parents is to disadvantage them and disadvantage us. I can imagine that every parent has some degree of goodness that could have flown and did flow from them to us. And if we focus on that, it can nurture us, it can nourish us, it can grow us, it can fulfill our needs, it can empower us, it can support our lives. But if we look at the, they didn't do this and they didn't do that and they didn't do the other thing, and we focus on those not supportive energy flows, we're depriving ourselves and them. We're not enhancing our life support. We're diminishing it. And if we're a parent and we have an opportunity to extend our energy to our children, we can support not only them, but us. You can imagine that a tree that is going to bear fruit is going to draw in the necessary elements, energy, through its roots, through its leaves, and produce a fruit and deliver that. So if we've had children, we've done some of the delivery. But at this point, energetically, we have the ability to continue supporting their lives. With the thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, the words we speak, and the actions we take with regard to that child. That child could be a day old, or 80 years old, or 100 years old, or 119 years old. And the energy that we deliver to that child is life support. Life support. Oftentimes, and you can see this with children, children look to their parents to try to find out what just happened to them so they can evaluate it. Did I fall and scrape my knee, or is my life in jeopardy? And based upon your feedback, when you look at me on the ground, on the playground field, I'm going to get up and dust myself off and go back to playing, or I'm going to scream bloody murder. So, Mom, Dad, what just happened to me? And if we go, that kid will start howling like crazy. But if we smile, you're okay. You're okay. That child will bounce right back up and continue. Life support. Life support. Continue to provide it. To everybody. These relationships are key. The feelings we have about ourselves, what we did and what we didn't do, what we can do in the future, all either add or remove life support. Our self-talk adds or removes life support. People want to know that they're effective. They want to know that they're effective. I had a friend who used to do counseling in San Diego, and she said, men want appreciation, women want security. Appreciation. Attaboy, attaboy, attaboy. From little boys up to really, really big boys, from young boys to really, really old boys, we want appreciation. Why? We want to know that what we're doing is effective. The ability to cause desirable effects, that's important. That's important. I think it's important to all people, not just men. It's important to women as well. But this feeling of effectiveness, I'm effective. I can learn to be more effective. I can learn to be more effective. I can learn to be more effective. That's life supporting. in so many ways, in so many different circumstances. Every single day, we have the opportunity to provide life support to ourselves in the way we think, feel, speak, and act, and to other people. Just think, if that became the goal, I liked it when I read years ago, the Dalai Lama said, "My religion is kindness. Kindness is my religion." If I were to look at that, kindness. Kindness is life supporting. It's life supporting. So we have that opportunity to support another person's life and their sense of self, their identity, their individuality. Or we can withhold it. And then we shut ourselves off from that flow that would naturally come to us so we could provide it to others. When we shut that flow off, we think we're maybe showing somebody else, punishing them. We're punishing ourselves. We're removing life support from ourselves. As much, if not more, than we're removing it from another person. So if we were to turn around and go, life support, I want to add love, kindness, respect, gentleness, appreciation for whatever I put my attention on. Whatever I put my attention on, whether it's a person or an animal or an inanimate object, whatever I put my attention on, and I flow those high vibration energies, I am supporting my own life. If we can appreciate another person's uniqueness, they're going to do it my way. They need to behave the way I say. They need to dress the way I... No, they don't. No, they don't. Just like each of us wants the freedom to express our own uniqueness. That's life enhancing. And we can respect that in another person. We don't have to remove life support. If a person wants to leave their physical body, that's certainly up to them. But they shouldn't do it because we've starved them of life support. We shouldn't die because we starved ourselves of life support. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. That sounds like a lot of life support right there in that one sentence. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.